All right. Hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. I am Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller Jr. At Fresno Nash and I are your hosts of the Cyber Coffee Hour. We are two products of Mount Vernon, New York, sharing our extensive experiences and stories and those of our amazing guests. We aim to share knowledge, elevate understanding, and foster a sense of belonging in this vast cyberspace. So for today's show, we're going to discuss a proposal of federal privacy law titled the American Privacy Rights Act and its potential impact. And to help break this all down is privacy engineer Aaron Relford. Now, Aaron Relford is an accomplished engineer, creative writer, and content producer with a remarkable 22-year career showcasing deep domain expertise across several industries, including media and entertainment, healthcare, robotics, and professional services. Her expertise as a governance, risk, and compliance professional in cybersecurity, privacy, and IT audit has been instrumental in shaping successful programs for renowned organizations such as the Walt Disney Company, Warner Brothers, 21st Century Fox, and Mattel Incorporated. Currently a privacy engineer at Google, Aaron's portfolio spans across speculative markets and emerging products in robotics, health, and AI. A distinguished speaker and thought leader in robotics privacy, Aaron served as lead for major projects at DeepMind, Waymo, X, and Everyday Robots, just to name a few. Beyond her technical role, Aaron is a dedicated contributor to the tech community, serving as an on-air talent for Women in Tech Makers, Google, and AnitaB.org. As an advocate for women in STEM, Aaron is leading diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, Aaron holds a bachelor's degree in information systems from the University of Houston. Aaron Relford, welcome to the Cyber Coffee Hour. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm good.
I'm very happy that you're here. And so I understand you're out in the Golden State. So, you know, how are things out there and, you know, tech world and, you know, Is it really warm all the time there, or is that just the room?
No, it's never warm in the Bay. It's like always a consistent 65 degrees, basically, right? Which is why we are always caught wearing either Columbia or Patagonia or North Face gear.
Really? Okay. I always thought it was pretty, you know, hot and sunny all the time.
Which is where I've spent my last 10 years. So in Los Angeles, it's definitely warm all the time, but not in the Bay.
All right. Well, so the article that we're going to look at today is titled New Attempt at Federal Privacy Law Would Complement State Laws at Private Right of Action. So the author for this is Scott Akita from CPO Magazine, dated 19 April 2024. So I'll just read a quick excerpt, and Aaron, then from there we'll dig into this. So another attempt at a federal privacy law has entered the arena as members of the House Committee on Energy and Commerce have introduced the American Privacy Rights Act, or APRA. The new proposal differs from prior attempts in essentially cherry picking. Elements of the strongest existing state laws, but looks to be generally leaving the issue of child's privacy online to separate legislation. As with many of these recent attempts to a comprehensive federal privacy law, the bill has bipartisan support, but its fate is just as uncertain as any of its predecessors during a congressional period in which data privacy has been expected to be kept in the backseat pending the outcome of another contentious election. So I'll stop right there. I just want to, like, what are the first thoughts hearing this as it pertains to this article?
Yeah, I think my first thoughts as a privacy professional, I am overjoyed that this country is now starting to be conscious of the conversation happening behind all of technology, which is you are giving companies your data, right? And right. I don't think most Americans really truly realize what that means when you say your data. And so this is just like one more opportunity to educate the general public. And at the same time, I think just as an American, it's nice to know that, you know, over in Europe, they're ahead of the game in terms of creating privacy rights or privacy protections and preventing privacy harms from their constituents. But for us, we have left that up to the states up until now. And so there's a real opportunity to now kind of just one more, while we consistently try to reach for liberties and freedoms, this is an opportunity to create some protections around harms that truly do exist.
No, and that's a great point too, because I don't think there's enough, I don't know, I believe there's awareness, but I don't know if people are taking heed to it, if that makes sense. Like, so for example, you know, someone wants to, you know, download the new trending app that's out, you know, for whatever it does, they're not reading, you know, the long precautions, you know, everyone is like, man, forget all that. I just want the app and, you know, take my info, whatever. And they don't, you know, sometimes they don't realize how intrusive some of these apps can be, you know. And a lot of times, I think a lot of people realize how damaging it can be until it's too late, until you become, ultimately, unfortunately, you become a victim of whether identity theft or anything like that, because now your data is being sold to like third parties, black market, what have you. And I think a lot of times it could be prevented if we just took better steps in protecting our data, and like who we share it with or which companies we share it with and things of that nature.
We don't necessarily, like you, as you mentioned, it's always about the latest and greatest toys, right, that we can get our hands on. And typically when you first download an app, the first thing that happens, the first exchange that happens is, hey, do you agree to our terms? And there's a link that you can click, but most importantly, it's yes or no, right? Like let us in immediately. And so we skip over the little tiny links.
No one clicks the link.
Right. And are you going to read the 12 pages of legal text that kind of spells out how you are giving them everything, including the baby and the bathwater? Like, right. No, we're not doing that. We just want to play with the toys. So you're absolutely right.
So even when you say that now, it just makes me think about, should there be, yes, you do have like the long, you know, terms and condition pages, but. So given that majority of people will not read that or even take the step of clicking a link and getting, you know, like I said, people want to get this app. Look, I'm trying to get this done now, like whatever. You know, I've got time to be reading all this legal stuff. But so with that said, should there be something in place to where, so let's say to break all that down, put it more like in layman's terms and kind of just give you, you know, the high points of what this does. That way, people that are, like I said, they're getting ready to download this app, have a better understanding or could really have more knowledge going in or be, I say, better educated with their decisions, you know, before they fully decide to click an app or, you know, install this app, you know, given knowing that what info it will have access to. Like, do you think something should be there, like from onset to, like I said, really try to break that down more into layman's terms so people can have a more informed, make a more informed decision.
Yeah, Joseph. So in privacy, we kind of approach this from a place of transparency. And you'll hear a lot of privacy professionals talk about user trust a lot. To your point, I absolutely do agree that there should be mechanisms in place that immediately kind of inform like what's important or what you should be paying attention to. So in one instance, you think about us living in this world of instant gratification, where we are being thrown so many signals in terms of information, light, sound, all of it. Well, right. When you're in a car driving, what do you initially see that tells you to stop? And why do they tell you to stop? Because they want to prevent you from causing harm or danger to yourself. So you'll see stop signs immediately. You identify the color red as something as like, oh, I need to preface myself, right? It's the same thing when you're engaging in technology with your apps, your phone, mobile, what have you. It's, yes, if I am downloading an app that is intending to share my data, why can that not be a very plain, maybe not plain text, but something that is conscious enough and just in plain view that says, hey, this is happening, right? And there's ways to do that. That's why you have user or UX professionals that work in tech to come up with ways that say, all right, this is a notification or this is a signal that you need to pay attention to immediately that says that, yes, we're going to collect this type of data, but we're also going to share data with other people. And we want you to know that. But it's also this going back to the Privacy Rights Act. This is why these protections are needed, because there is nothing that says that companies have to provide you with that information. It is up to a company to be a good character and a good actor to inform you what they're actually collecting. And there are companies out there that do a good job of that.
Good. And there's some that could care less.
Correct. On purpose. On
right.
purpose.
Yeah. So, yeah, so looking back at this article now, so the proposed bill is sponsored by committee chairs, Kathy McMorris Rogers and Maria Cantwell. So they want to establish a federal privacy law with national data privacy rights. So part of that includes data minimization requirements, a consumer right to opt out of data transfer and targeted advertising, and the right to access, correct, or delete personal data. So notably, it introduces a right to private action, allowing individuals to sue data holders directly for violations, and prohibits mandatory arbitration in cases of substantial privacy harm. So I'll stop right there real quick. I thought that was pretty, that caught my attention. So it's actually giving power to individuals to say, look, if I see my data being mismanaged, I have the right to sue you. I have the right to come after you. Where before, we didn't have that, I guess, necessary right, or even to know that we even had that power to even do so.
Yeah, that for me, two things come to mind, right? So just even as I'm educated and know what to look for in some of these terms and agreements, one thing that you notice is if you feel like you're being disparaged or you have a problem with something that a company has done, you typically will go and search out their contact information, right? And you'll call their 800 number, but that leads you down. Most people don't know how to approach, how do I get something rectified? That's one thing. But the second thing is when you read these terms and conditions, they typically say that if you have a problem, we have to do it through an arbitration. You can't sue us in court. And you have to sign that contract. Again, that's that immediate, do you agree to the terms and conditions that you click on? You say yes. So now if you have a problem and you want to sue a company, you're not able to do that within a U.S. court. You have to do that through arbitration, private arbitration with the company. That doesn't put control in the hands of consumers. And so this Privacy Rights Act creates that opportunity where if you have been disparaged by a company, you have a means to go after them.
I think that's going to be a big game changer. Because again, just not having that capability beforehand, because then you just feel pretty much powerless. You're like, oh man, my stuff is out there and this company's doing XYZ with it.
Yeah.
No, so I think that's big. So I guess another part of it too, that, you know, it addresses data security, imposing responsibilities on organizations for data defense and executive accountability during breaches, new notification requirements for breaches involving foreign adversaries. So, so there's pretty much a breach almost every day, right? I mean, it's almost numb to it. So you're just expecting it.
Yes.
And then usually what happens, of course, you know, they'll notify sometimes months after the incident happened, and then they'll offer like credit monitoring for a year, for free. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, is that just going to be more of that, or is there something that is there more call to action for these organizations that are, I guess, stewards of our data? Like, so when a breach does happen, is there more substantial penalties, fines, or anything like that? Or is something to where the affected individuals can get more than just a year of, you know, credit monitoring?
Yeah, so I think that is something with the bill that will definitely need to be worked out. And also keep in mind, Joseph, like, you know, we live in a society of capitalism where if you and I have a business, we also want to be protected from, you know, outrageous things that will kind of put us back on our heels in terms of doing business, right? So right. We want to do right by consumers, but we also want to be able to do business. So I think that is a little bit of give and take. But to your point of what you said earlier, when you think about, and I'm going to date myself here, but like, I remember when Target had the big, dust up with, they got in through, I think the HVAC system or something, right?
Right, yes. Yeah.
And, you know, you fast forward today, I subscribe to TechCrunch and it seems like every day there is now a breach or you're getting, sometimes you're not even getting the notification. Cause I remember, not to pick on a certain company that I actually subscribe to, but my TV is a Roku. And Roku made you sign, they had an updated terms and conditions that recently came out. And if you didn't read it, it basically like protected them against more of something happening. But then later you find out that there were more breaches that happened over at Roku, where wow. People now have your information. And you mentioned credit monitoring. Like, I currently pay Discover $15 a month to alert me when my information shows up on the dark web. I don't know about you, but we already have like a dozen subscription services that we already subscribe to. I didn't need another one. So it's like, I am having to do the due diligence on my own to pursue protection against companies who don't do their due diligence in protecting your data. So it's one more reason why this Privacy Rights Act is important that we have. And I just think the thing I want to stress is there just has to be a good give and take between both consumer and businesses so that we both can function together.
Absolutely. Does that make sense? And that made me even think about the breach that happened with LastPass. Repeated breaches because I had used LastPass initially, you know, I was a big fan of it, honestly. And then when the breach came out, I was like,
Stop using it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So moved all my stuff off of it because it was a pretty significant breach. And then, so I moved all my stuff from it, removed all my data, closed the account. I'm done. And then, I don't know, couple weeks later there was reports of another breach. I was like, yeah, that's crazy,
you know.
So yeah, it's too much. So even situations like that, especially when organizations are having repeat issues going on, as a consumer, when you're looking at it, I'm like, oh man, you're killing me out here. I mean, a year credit monitoring is not going to fix, you know, because my stuff is already out there. I'm getting railroaded right now.
And you know, Dr. Joseph, think about, we are both tech professionals, but think about our parents and, right. You know, maybe Gen Z is more prepared to deal with that. But those who have come before us are not that plugged in. And so how do they protect themselves when something like LastPass, and I myself used LastPass before the breach. It was like, what are we supposed to do? You know, they tell us not to write down our passwords down on paper, or don't use your iPhone notes.
That's not helping with all these breaches. That ain't help. I'm about to go back to it.
It almost seems like I'm better protected just having it stored in my phone. But right. it's to that point where we started this conversation. Transparency and trust is super important. You have to trust a company and a company's brand that they're going to secure your information, but also be transparent in the breaches that are happening, how they happened, right, to a point. And how we can better protect ourselves from happening again.
So going further along with this article, so the Energy and Commerce Committee statement on the proposed federal privacy law, they highlight two potential points of contention. So they have exemptions for small businesses and the preemption of state data privacy laws. So under the proposed law, businesses with annual revenue under $40 million and data processing for fewer than 200,000 individuals will be exempt. However, they could still be regulated by selling cover data to third parties. So this exemption aims to include most American businesses while targeting data brokers. Pat's efforts to pass the federal privacy laws were hindered by state laws, notably California. Pelosi believed provided superior consumer protection. So the new bill addresses this by incorporating strong terms from state laws, including those of California, Colorado, Illinois, and Washington, and potentially deferring to state law in certain areas where it offers greater protection. And I'll stop right there real quick. So I'm surprised, and I don't know if this is an exhaustive list, but I thought even New York had a strong state law as it pertains to privacy. I mean, I could be wrong, but and I'm not quite sure if there's more states or these are the ones they just right now they just highlight. But do you see this as like? I guess the message that I take from this is that I guess are more states more taking a more proactive approach when it comes to data privacy than maybe the federal government. Is that accurate to surmise from this?
Yeah, there are only a handful of United States areas, or let me rephrase that. There are only a handful of states in the U.S. that have privacy laws on the books. There are a lot of proposed laws that are happening, but as far as enacted, there's only a handful of them here. And I think if you go back to 2018, where the EU passed the GDPR, right, the General Protection, General Data Protection, GDPR. Data Protection Regulation, excuse me.
There you go.
Yeah, that three times fast.
Worked it out.
Yes. When they passed that in 2018, like that was unheard of prior, like how companies are to treat data. And that's only in the EU, right? So now what you start to see is there are countries like Germany that are passing more stringent laws. You have India, you know, countries that are now starting to expand, even China expand their data privacy laws. And so here in the States, we tend to roll things out very slowly. I think both you and I know that technology, you know, changes. They used to say 18 months. Now I think it's like every 9 months is something shorter than that.
Absolutely.
The law always takes a long time to catch up to technology. So things move faster in the States, as you obviously know where our politics are in this country. It's hard to get things done at the federal level. So at some point, there were attorney generals that started to think about their own constituents in the state and say, how do we protect them from these harms that are happening with certain companies and technology companies? But I think the conversation has always been at the federal level to think about privacy. It was just a matter of how do you create something that encompasses all? And you have to also think about, Joseph, where in different states, different industries matter, different things matter, right? So it's how do you kind of one size fit all a privacy protection acts or rights that are going to impact everyone. I think it's a harder problem to solve. And I'll take it to this level where you say the expectation of privacy, most people have different views on that. What is your expectation of privacy in public? Right? What's your expectation of privacy in your own home? People see that differently. And so when you think about how we vote, it is typically not until we as society start to speak up and say, I care about this, that our politicians start to go, oh, maybe we should do something about that. That's probably a long way of saying, yeah, like we should have done something. We should be leading in this matter, but unfortunately the U.S. is not.
No, and I think sometimes it is going to have to take someone to be directly affected before, all right, we need to change this.
Always.
But isn't that sad? I mean, like, why does that have to take that? I mean, I think if we have the research, we have those, our experts that are specializing in this, and giving their perspective and listening to them and trying to incorporate that. But yeah, a lot of times it's just we don't have the right focus. And
sometimes gluttons for punishment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But as you mentioned, like it is slower on the federal level because there's expected to be a lot of infighting, and this article even highlights that, you know, especially when it comes to like with business friendly privacy laws, both sides of the aisle are going to have a good conversation about that. And even with states such as Virginia, Utah, and also those opposed to private action for consumers.
Yeah.
So discussion. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say one thing that I like that you pointed out is within the act that it states that there's a threshold, right? So companies that don't do more than 40 million a year or 200,000, they have 200,000 consumers. That, as a small business owner, you want to pay attention to because, you know, again, we are a society of capitalism. You want to infuse small businesses. So if they have to spend more money trying to figure out how to institute these measures, it takes away from being able to do business. And so I don't want to say I'm pro business as much, but it's like once you have, you know, kind of we all want to be entrepreneurs and make money in this country. But it's thinking about the both sides, right? The both sidesism where it's. I'm glad that they have the threshold instead of everyone, because if that were the case, you kind of, it's slower to roll out because companies have to position themselves instead of these like conglomerates who can, you know, they have 10 departments that solely focus on privacy.
So, yeah, so I'm very interested just to see how this bill progresses if it, you know, if it lives or dies, but I know there's going to be a lot of work that has to be done, but I'm very interested to see how this matures, if that, as time goes on. So that should be a good topic.
I do hope that they, I don't know if you're paying attention now to what's going on in the government, but you know, they just passed a bill to fund Ukraine and Taiwan and a bunch of other folks, but right. I'm thinking about how they package these bills, right? And so you have, I don't know if you're paying attention also, like there's the AI Bill of Rights that the U.S. has put out. And so there's talk about this newer technology. And I'm wondering if it's going to be possible to package privacy into whatever they roll out for AI regulations, simply because... I was on social media today and I saw something involving Kanye West and I go, something's just not right about this picture. And in the comments, they were like, oh yeah, this is AI. And it's like, if I'm struggling to tell what's real.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what other folks are dealing with. So yeah, I'm hoping that there's a greater cause to pass a Privacy Protection Act alongside AI regulations that again don't have us second guessing every time I open up the internet that it's going to be a problem.
And you know, that's a great point, because when you have like that spoofing or, you know, I guess misinformation or disinformation, so as you mentioned, example with Kanye and not be able to decipher whether that's real or AI. I don't know if you remember initially when AI was kind of getting on the scene about that. You could pretty much tell, it was quite obvious that you could tell, like, this is, all right, this is computer generated or this was AI. Because it just wasn't quite, it was fairly good, but it still, you know, you could pick it up fairly quickly. But now, I mean, it's getting good. It's getting better. So it is getting harder to decipher as, you know, what's real or not. And that even from the perspective of election security, that is going to be a big problem when it comes to around election time. This is an election year, and that's something to pay attention to when it comes to, as you mentioned, with social media and the messaging that comes out from whether, you know, Democrat or Republican side. You do have to be, you know, mindful of, you know, information that's comes out and say, hey, was this really from him? Or, you know, and I think even social media giants have to, I think, even take more of a, I'd say, a proactive approach when it comes to that, to try to get ahead of that, to help the public to say, hey, this is a an AI generated image or AI generated video, or you know, almost like, you know, back in the, well, probably still do it now, but like with CDs, but I think everyone kind of just downloads music on, you know.
Yeah.
But true. but back in the day, we used to buy CDs, and when it had the CDs that were explicit content, it had the label on them. I think it's almost had to do the same thing here with AI. Like when you see an AI generated image or a video, I'm going to have to say this was made by AI. And actually, I think I did see something like that earlier.
Watermarking, yeah.
Yeah, I thought I saw something related to that earlier today. That's going to be, I don't know if it's been done yet or that's just being talked about, but yeah, I think we're going to need something like that. So to let people know, you know, because yeah, not everyone's gonna have that same keen eyes as you know, you're looking at it, it's like, all right, okay. Someone else could look at it like, oh.
You raise a very good point. There's a couple of things I want to touch on. So coming from the world of media and entertainment, right, working at companies like Disney and Warner Brothers, like you can imagine they have a vested interest in protecting their copyrights, you know, when it comes to what AI may create. And so, yeah, it's upon or beholden to tech companies to kind of figure out how to implement these safeguards that protect the consumer as well as the companies that produce this content. And this is like a shameless plug since we're on a cybersecurity podcast. When you think about the world of cybersecurity, it's not just security, right? There's this thing called trust and safety that is becoming even more predominant and more important in the space of technology. And trust and safety professionals, it's up to them to kind of come up with these measures and controls that we can implement within infrastructure and technology to kind of solve for these problems of how do we have safeguards for people that are interacting and engaging on the internet. So that's just a shameless plug for trust and safety.
Hey, no shame at all. No shame. No, that's good. That's good. All right. So we'll transition now as we give opportunity for our listeners to learn more about our guests. And Aaron, as you are our guest today, love to learn a little bit more about you. So I think first, I know you're into robotics. I know you're in a lot of things. You have a definitely very impressive background, but just kind of focusing on robotics for a bit, if you will. Is there an element within robotics that you're, I guess, maybe focused on or what really garners your interest when we talk about the subject of robotics?
Yeah, what's really got me excited, and that's the thing, Joseph, being in the world of STEM, you have to have a certain curiosity about things, right? Like, because there's so much to consume. And when we talk about math and science and all that, right? Like, people kind of see that and they go, oh, this is hard stuff. And it's like, well, if you're curious about it, it's no longer like a challenge. It's a positive challenge, right? So for robotics, that's kind of what garnered my interest is data ethics. There's this conversation around when you are developing a product, privacy professionals will ask certain questions around the data lifecycle, which is like, what are you collecting? How are you using it? How are you sharing it? Those type of things. How are you protecting it? But the ethics part of that conversation, what's your motivation for this product, doesn't necessarily happen in the same space as security or privacy, right? That's happening somewhere else where you might hear, you hear things like responsible innovation, organizations like that. So in terms of robotics, what garnered my interest was one day I'm walking to the Google office in San Francisco, and there is a egg-shaped robot that is taller than me. Okay. Just standing there, and it's got blue lights, and I'm like, what the heck is that?
Right.
Like, I had never seen something like this before. And I'm from the South, right? So people who live on the West Coast have encountered robots more frequently in public than someone who lives in New Jersey, right? So I see this robot, and I'm kind of like on my heels, and I'm like, wait a minute. What is this thing doing? Right. And as a privacy engineer that works with robotic companies, I know that these blue lights aren't just, hi, you see me. No, this thing is collecting information. Mm-hmm. There's sensors on it. There's, you know, it's heat seeking. And so I go to I see the branding on the robot. And so I go to the company's website and I'm reading, and this thing had all kinds of instruments on top of it, right? So it's basically a security robot. And so my next question became, well, how is this thing, like, did it capture me? And if it did, going back to this Privacy Rights Act, do I have the right to contact this company and ask what type of information they've collected on me? You know, again, and this is where that conversation starts to happen with the expectation of privacy, because I was in public, I was on a public sidewalk. So this thing collecting me, maybe, Joseph, I am hiding from a stalker and I don't necessarily want my whereabouts to be known. You know, you think about these kind of like conflicting problems. And so that's what kind of got me interested in robotics, just because I went from working at a place like Disney where you have an imagination. And you remember WALL-E, the robot.
Yes.
Right? Like, we see these things on television and I love sci-fi. But then I work at a company that is creating these type of things. And it's like, so we go from imagination to actual like utilization. And I love that kind of cross-pollination, basically. Right. So that's what got me really amped up in robotics privacy.
So now I have to ask you, so when you saw that robot, were you waiting for like Will Smith to come out and, you know, like the movie I, Robot, just, you know.
Pulling my phone out like, what is this? And, you know, you're waiting for the puppet master to come out. And
Oh my gosh.
One more thing where, you know, I had to learn that, you know, robots are, especially autonomous robots, right? Where it's out in the public or out in the wild on its own. Most people don't realize that sometimes a robot will have a remote operator. So Joseph, you're out, you know, somewhere in DC controlling this thing. Right. And then sometimes, no, this thing is using machine learning to operate on its own, and you have no idea where that information is going. So, yeah, awesome. I'm being a nerd right now.
This is the perfect place for it. You know,
realize I'm on a tangent.
Nerd out. That's no problem. So when we're talking about cybersecurity, like how has cyber impacted your career, like your business endeavors and things of that nature?
Yeah. So again, I'm going to date myself. I got started in tech at least 25 years ago, and cybersecurity was a, what is that kind of conversation, right? Kind of like cloud. Everybody's like, what's the cloud? That was such a big deal.
Yeah. Some people didn't know that it was, some people really thought it was an actual cloud. They tried to.
Right. It's like, how do you get people to understand the difference between on-prem and cloud, right?
Yeah.
So cybersecurity really fueled my career, Joseph, because at the time I was working in IT audit, and I was at Mattel, and I knew I wanted to get into the digital landscape in some way. Like, I didn't want to just do warehouse audits or manufacturing audits. And Fox, at the time it was 21 Century Fox, reached out for me to interview for a manager role over there. And when I talked to the director, I was like, I don't want to do regulation work, which is like SOX and that kind of stuff in the world of audit. Right. And he's like, okay, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to work on the next best thing. Like, what's happening in emerging tech. And that happened to be cybersecurity. So most people, like, what does that look like to them? Cybersecurity is like, especially in the media landscape, it's when you have offices across the world, everyone's got a laptop, and you want to kind of monitor and make sure that if they lose their laptop, that people aren't able to just crack the thing open and steal information, right? So that's a segment of cybersecurity that people may look for. Again, I'm dating myself, making sure that every laptop has a Sophos agent on it or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. Or making sure that people have awareness of what phishing actually is, because you have thousands of employees in your organization and they're all opening like millions of emails every day. And so mm-hmm. it's making sure that they understand what the awareness is to, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't click on that, right? Maybe I should forward that to the security team to make sure that this is okay. So I got into the space of cybersecurity, managing a program for the studio, making sure that our different offices across the world were looking after ourselves, essentially. And that kind of rolled into one thing led to another. And that's kind of how I got into the world of cyber. So yeah, it's definitely fueled my career in where I've worked.
So given that you're from the South, what are some obstacles you would say that you've had to overcome to get to where you are today?
Ooh, that's a great question. So it's funny when you think about your own narrative, because this is your life, you know, Of course you didn't, at the time, you didn't set out to do these things. They kind of just happened, right? And I think about some of the obstacles that I had to get past. And one of them is, I like to tell people, you know, I grew up poor little Black girl in Little Rock, Arkansas. And that sounds negative, but like, I grew up poor. And of course, my parents did a great job of not letting us know that we were poor. Like, we didn't know we were poor, but like, we were living in true poverty, like the government cheese and all that, the powdered milk. Like, I know exactly what that looks like. And so, Joseph, when you grow up in a household like that, you know, the opportunities, the ability for you to go and do things, the money may not be there, right, to participate in extracurricular activities. So it was school that was like my plug into the world of STEM. I was in fourth grade when they came and got me out of class. And I was like, I thought I was in trouble. And they took me to this trailer for GT students, gifted and talented. And so I will never forget being introduced to the world of NASA and the planets and the solar system. And it was like, my brain was like popcorn. And so I was
synapses firing off.
Yes, like, this is where I want to be, right? In the fourth grade. And so I share that story because when we think about the challenges, like, there weren't, unless a teacher took interest in you, unless you had other students who had the same interest, you're not going to get the encouragement that you need to keep pushing, because like the criteria and the content that you have to start to digest, to learn, to critically think, this stuff is hard, you know?
Yeah.
Not everybody loves math. I did. Math was my favorite subject, but like, I remember,
I'll tell you right now, math was not my favorite.
Oh, like, geometry, I was, all, again, popcorn. I remember being in class and my teacher would be like, leave her alone, because everybody else is looking at me like, what's wrong with you? But I loved stuff, right? So yeah, there were definitely challenges. And I think this was the biggest challenge when I got to college, was sitting in a room with all white males, being the only, not only the only woman, but the only Black person in the room, and having your professor kind of lean over your shoulder in front of a computer and go, you doing okay? And it's like, why are you checking up on me? You know, like, that was my initial reaction to that. Whereas he's just being helpful and I'm on my guard because I'm constantly having to contend with, you know, being the only girl in the room, quote unquote, and people not being as helpful or what have you, or kind of sniding you because they don't think you're smart based on their own biases, that type of thing. So coming up, that was definitely a challenge, both the poverty, the having the lack of encouragement, and just the lack of people in my space that saw the world the same way I do, right? Because you quickly, you hear about imposter syndrome a lot. I don't really believe in imposter syndrome, because like, if you bad, you know, you got it. But what I will say, coming into spaces, and this is something I had to contend with when I started working at Google, you show up in a space where people may think differently than you do, or may look differently than you do. And so you start to either think, I need to conform, or you start asking yourself the question, do I conform, or do I stay unique and stay this unicorn that I am, right? And mm-hmm. not everybody has like the will to figure out that the answer is no, you stay the unicorn. That's what makes you special. You know,
right.
Conforming can work in some spaces, but not every space. So those were definitely challenges. I'm going on these whole tangents, but I'd love to share that because I think most people who reach out to me looking for mentorship, they're just looking for someone to tell them that they're doing a great job and, you know, stay with it. That's what I was looking for. And I just didn't necessarily have that.
I think that that's great because, and sometimes, especially with someone who's trying to get started or trying to get their career started and try to figure things out, sometimes they may need that push. They may need that external push to say, hey, you know, you could do this. This is something that's for you. I see potential in you. Where a lot of times we could be our own worst enemy and talk ourselves out of something great, you know. And
absolutely.
So I always believe that the value of mentorship is big. You know, always tell even my mentees to always look for, try to get with a mentor. Of course, someone that's working in the space that you want to be in, so that they can give you more of that pointed advice and really help you along the way. And you have that guidance. You know, it's almost like a coach on a basketball team. You know, you have everyone on the team working together, but you know, everyone is talented, but you need a coach to really drive and get everyone to work together, to work as one. So it's kind of the same thing, at least to me. It's, you know, you need someone, like I said, a mentor, and not just one mentor. You need a couple, you know, because
right.
I think every mentor could serve a different purpose.
Sorry, I'm not
going to
talk about my problems anyway. Yes.
No, you're good. The last thing I'll say with that is just, I think a lot of people miss out on opportunities because they didn't have someone in their corner to help guide them and tell them, say, hey, you know, don't quit, don't give up. This is something you could do. You know, you have the potential to do this. You should sign up for that class or go for that program or, you know, that robotics class or, you know, whatever it is, because they may see something that, you know, that you may not. So
that's right. Oh, Joseph, we don't have the time to talk about. I contribute the success of my career, and I may get in trouble for saying this, but it was men who saw something in me and thought, you should do this. Why don't you come along and do X, Y, and Z? It was always someone coming along to say, Aaron, I think this is a good idea. And, you know, don't get me wrong, like I love to chase comments, as I tell people, but it was always that person that had a hand who was more powerful and had the ability, the sponsorship to be like, I think you should do this. I think you're good for this. Or I like to pick on my personal mentor as a guy I used to work for, who's still my mentor today. You know, he told me long after I left him, he's like, Aaron, you're a leader. I don't think you know that. And at the time I didn't, I was struggling with that, Joseph, you know, and to hear him say that just kind of gave me this motivation to like go and do the things that I need to do. And I'll also say, you know, at 44, it's taken me this long to kind of figure out that I don't necessarily need permission. I think a lot of times in minority communities, we're so used to asking for permission to do things. And a lot of people don't realize they have their own agency to pursue and curate the lives that they want and the careers that they want. Yeah. So it's just being able to have that internal empowerment that says, like, I'm gonna do this regardless if someone told me I can't, you know, or someone says, I don't think you're smart enough for that. Or I don't, you know, you're never going to be nothing. Cause I think everybody has that voice in their life.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, no, you need that internal buildup. Right. And so you only get that through a lot of validating experiences, whether they were you being a goal driven or somebody seeing just the spark in you and going like, oh, this is like raw, this is pay dirt. Like, we can do so much with this, you know?
Right. All right, so I have a real tough question for you. So you may need to sit down. Actually, you're sitting down, you need to stand up and then sit back down. What is your favorite coffee? I'll get you through the day.
So I love coffee, right? I'm a coffee snob. I'm one of those people like drink coffee black just for the taste. Yeah. But, you know, listen, if it's Starbucks, I am a white chocolate mocha girl with almond milk. Gotta have almond
milk. There you go. There you go.
Can't do that regular stuff anymore.
Gotcha. So when you're in line, like, so when you're approaching Starbucks, do they already have your coffee ready? Like, they see you call, all right, we know her order. We're just,
I am that person. I do not deviate. Like, I am that person. I do not deviate my coffee order.
There you go.
Unless they got that pistachio, then maybe we might.
Gotcha. What are some of your hobbies, like interests? Like, what do you like to do for fun when you're not working within the world of cyber? Like, what do you do to unwind?
Oh God, you know, it's so important. You know, that's a whole other podcast. Like, people need to walk honestly, Joseph, one thing that really kind of keeps me sane, and I tell people, if tech is my wife, I am going to one day leave my wife for my mistress, which will be writing. So I genuinely love writing. Again, working in media and entertainment, I love writing screenplays and thinking of storytelling in a way like sci-fi. So, you know, I'm the person that's watching action movies and sci-fi movies. I'm not doing romantic comedies kind of thing. So a lot of that. I love baseball. So don't play baseball anymore, softball. But now I love to, like, catch a game if I can. And for the most part, playing with my dog, my Yorkie. That's what I do to unwind.
Oh, yeah. So your Yorkie Pepper, you know, share a little bit about Pepper. I'm actually disappointed he didn't make his entrance
into
the show.
Look, he's right here. He's
stretching up a leg. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, looking a little rough, but that's okay. No, Pepper's a lifesaver. That's my guard buddy, but and my best friend at the same time.
No, that's nice. My companion. There you go. So as mentioned, you say you like baseball. So for me, I'm a big basketball head. You know, being from New York, my New York Knicks are in the playoffs. I actually play later today at 6 Eastern. I know you're on the West Coast. But I know you say you just mentioned baseball. Like, who's a team that you're following that you watch?
Listen, I'm going to be an L.A. Dodgers fan till the day where I am in the world. It's the Dodgers for me.
Whoa, okay.
I would also say, second to that, I still rock the Houston Astros. I know people have their opinions about them, and that's fine. I don't care.
You know what? We're going to end this episode now because, you know, I'm a Yankees fan, and, you know, us Yankees and Astros don't really get along.
But here's the thing, Joseph. Did you know that the Dodgers are the original Yankees? They were the Brooklyn Dodgers before they moved out to the West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, y'all cramping our style, and, you know, gotta let y'all go ahead at that. But
I'll be careful because I've been to Yankee Stadium. Let me stop.
Oh my gosh! Oh, that's funny. No, but Aaron, this was absolutely amazing. I definitely appreciate you taking the time to be on the Cyber Coffee Hour. And as we end, if there's any last thoughts you want to share with our audience before we go.
Yeah, I guess thank you for having me, Dr. Joseph. It was a great conversation. And I think if anything I would share, always remember that you can opt out and into a conversation. And that even means conversation with your technology, right? You can always opt in and opt out. And if you can't, you should question that.
There you go. Thank you for that. And thank you to those watching and listening. Thank you for tuning in to the Cyber Coffee Hour. So if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on all of our platforms. You can find the Cyber Coffee Hour on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. That is a wrap, and catch you on the next one. Later.